Gen Z is becoming sort of the tool belt generation. If you've heard that article out there, that is what we're seeing, especially trade school was up. I think it was either 15 or 16% last year. So it's moving in that direction with advocacy out there. And obviously the social media and putting it out there, I do see a lot of people in different trades, in welding or it's electrical or it's carpenter. They were actually showcasing their work, you know, especially on Instagram or TikTok. You see every single day they're doing the work and showing you how to do it, on top of also teaching potential younger generation that, yeah, you can get into this field or in this trade and you can take these steps and look at the money that I just made. There's a lot more visibility out there into what people are actually doing to prior years than people had this old adage that it was option B for the bad kids. And I think that's just changing in a very short period of time.
Any clue how important blue-collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue-collar workers, our lives would cease to exist.
This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast.
Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
Today we're joined by Joshua O'Neill, a welding expert with 22 years of experience across various trades. In 2019, Joshua shifted to teaching welding at Barstow Community College in Riverside County Office of Education. With a master's in organizational leadership and adult learning, he combines industry knowledge with exceptional teaching. He's now pursuing a doctorate in educational leadership and is committed to mentoring future tradespeople. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I want to start off with a quote. If you always want a job, learn a trade. And it doesn't matter what trade it is, because you'll never go hungry. How much of an impact has that had on you? And who told you that?
Oh, man. My dad told me that a long time ago when I was coming up in the game. My dad got hired on at the U.S. Borax Mine in 1977. They're one of the largest open pit mines in California. He got hired on out there as a laborer at first, started out in the shipping department, loading sacks, 100-pound sacks, right? Then he ended up getting a bid to go into the mine to operate some equipment. So he got to operate a skip loader and different drags and whatnot. And then he got a bid to get into the millwright program. And ever since he became a millwright, his whole life changed. Our whole life changed. My dad was a young man when he got married. He was only 20 years old. My mom was 18. So, you know, they're young parents. I got to see the growth of my dad at a very young age and see what kind of impact going from operating equipment to now being in a trade and then making a bunch of money. When I started to come of age and wanted to get into work, he expressed to me, like, if this is the route you want to go, learn a trade so that way, no matter what, you can fall back onto something. You're going to have work, always, as long as you hustle. Really dependent on how much I wanted it. I seen how much work was available, so I jumped all over it as soon as I could.
It's interesting how much your parents have an impact on your journey. And especially with your father being a millwright, impacted your life. Were other people in your family blue collar? Did anybody else go the blue collar route besides you, or was just you? Or
so my grandfather was a mechanic. He was a World War II veteran. He used to be the tank operator, so the Sherman tanks. And then when World War II was over, he lived in New Mexico. So my whole family's from New Mexico, and they migrated towards Barstow, another desert town in the middle of nowhere. So there was a Marine Corps logistics base that had a large maintenance center. That's actually where I got hired. So fast forward from my carpentry journey, you'll get to where I got hired on the same base as my grandpa. It was pretty cool to be kind of following the same footsteps as my grandfather, who was a mechanic, and then my dad, who became a millwright. And then I had that mechanical mind and wanted to build stuff.
So you transitioned along the way. I believe you were a field construction worker, and then you went into heavy mobile diesel mechanic. How did that transition sort of happen? And what kind of challenges did you face in either of those trades?
How it all started. I wrestled from the eighth grade all the way through my sophomore year of college. I ended up getting a wrestling scholarship to go to Bakersfield College. The only kind of job I could get so that I can make it to practice at 3:30 was to work construction. So I started framing and got on with the framing crew. The hours were from 6 to 2. So it worked out perfect. I had a little apartment next to the school, was able to go to school, work during the day. I actually had aspirations to be a math teacher and a wrestling coach back in the day. That was my biggest dream. I wanted to be just like my wrestling coach, who was my math teacher, and he became an icon at the school. But then after I graduated in December of 2000 with my associates, my first associates, I found out how much teachers made. They made like 35 grand, and I was like, I didn't want any part of that. So I kept working construction because I was bringing home maybe $700-$800 cash every Friday. I got to have cold beers with my boss at the end of the job on Friday, you know? So it was just like, it was a different type of atmosphere that I felt like I was one of the boys, and I made a lot of money. Fast forward to 2008, when the economy crashed and I had to reinvent myself, I ended up taking a job at an auto parts store at Napa Auto Parts, probably around 2006, because of a girlfriend that I had at the time. I was still working construction, but I was working as a driver. And then construction slowed down. I was able to get onto the counter. So I started working the counter and working with the crew on the counter, which were Hispanic guys. And they taught me how to speak Spanish, helped the customers coming in. And you wouldn't believe how many Spanish-speaking mechanics are out there doing big stuff. And everybody thinks like, oh, well, these are uneducated people. No, they're really, really smart. There's just a language barrier. So anyways, I felt like Napa turned into like college for me, for auto parts. Learned how to catalog things, learned how to look up seals, identify parts with their serial numbers, and just do that whole like research thing. One Sunday, I was on the computer and filled out an application on USA Jobs, and they were looking for a mechanics helper at the base. I filled out the application, I got picked, and that's really where there was a big turning point in my life. Was now I was working at the base, same place my grandpa worked. I was making some pretty good money. I got pulled into the hydraulic shop. So there's a bunch of different shops that are in there in that maintenance center. And I got put in the hydraulic shop, which was every component that's out there has hydraulics, right? So we were rebuilding cylinders. We were rebuilding pumps, motors. A journeyman took me under his wing, and I literally just to watch everything he did, from the way he smoked a cigarette to stood back and looked and look at schematics to how he organized his toolbox. And I just copied him. Because if people respected him, I wanted to do the same thing, minus the cigarettes. I didn't smoke cigarettes. The guy ended up going out on leave, and we were on a big project, and I continued the project. I was able to build 4 more of these components that sold to Albany, Georgia, the other logistics site. They came, QC saw, and what I built was, it's called a Marine MK-154 mine clearance launcher. So it's a big hydraulic box that goes on top of an AAV, and these big doors open up and the stinger pops out and 3 rockets are adjusted and it shoots off a kite tail of C4. So when it lands, it blows up and then the convoy can go through.
So you were working on some fun stuff. It sounds like you were pretty happy in what you were doing. And it's interesting that you had different trade experiences across your journey. When you were working here, what was the transition? Because obviously you're a welding instructor, but what switched you over to welding at that point?
Welding came into play when I left the base. I left the base and got hired on at the same mine that my dad was working at. While I was working for Napa, I used to deliver parts out there. And I became the outside salesman dealing with the mine and a couple other mines that were out there in Mojave Desert, because my boss didn't want to drive out there no more. He's like, hey, man, you go see your dad, have lunch with him, go talk to the people at the shop and hobnob, right? Well, I made good friends with the superintendent of the gas shop. They were looking for mechanics. And, you know, it's one of those things, who you know, it's real hard to get into the mine. And he hit me up and said, hey, you're going to have an interview tomorrow. Make sure you can be on the phone at this time. I did an interview. They hired me on for them. Since they're a union, they brought me in as a second class. So I had to go through their, it's kind of like an apprenticeship program, informal, but we did have to log hours. And I was in the program for about 3.5 years. And then I journeyed out. So I got hired on in 2011. And I journeyed out in 2014. While we were there, they offered overtime for anybody that knew how to weld because we were reskinning the beds of the haul trucks. So we're talking 280-ton haul trucks, and they were lined with 3/4-inch hardocks. And that was the abrasive material so that, you know, once it's wore down to the skin, the actual frame of the bed, we would cut it out and replace it. Well, I lied and said, yeah, I know how to weld. I jumped in with a friend who was a younger mechanic, and he took me under his wing. And literally, the LN25 had a little notch for wire feed speed and a notch for voltage. As long as you had the dial on those notches, you're running. We ran a 1/16 wire, ESOP wire, using a Miller XMT power source and a Lincoln wire feeder. That's how I got into welding. Found out that people leave you alone when you weld. I got into it more, decided to go back to school in 2015 to give the company a better product. During all this time, my dad ended up getting cancer. He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and ended up retiring from the mine in 2013. He ended up working for a construction company in Bakersfield, wound his way back and became the head maintenance instructor for Barstow Community College. So when I decided to go back, he didn't have enough load for the classes he was teaching, so he took over the welding department. So I was able to get in with my dad, and he was my instructor. So I thought, one of the biggest barriers we had growing up was my dad couldn't teach me that because we didn't have a garage, we didn't have equipment or the electrical power supply. So it was all, you know, fun talk and, hey, one day you could do this. And it all came to fruition. I ended up becoming my dad's TA more than a freaking student because I was welding all the time at the mine, doing all kinds of projects and just learning more while I was there, coming back to the classroom, helping out. In 2017, we got the diagnosis from my youngest son. We found out that he had a terminal condition. He was 7 years old. Prior to that, we were on a 7-year odyssey to figure out what was wrong with him. There was a bunch of developmental delays, and we didn't know what was going on. So I was working 12-hour shifts at the mine, found out he was sick, decided to bid out to utility maintenance, which brought me home, and I was home by 5 o'clock every day working 4/10s. So transferred out in October of 17. In March of 2018, we did our Make-A-Wish trip with my son. April, the very next month, he had back-to-back grand mal seizures. I decided to take a leave of absence. So in June of 2018, I went on a leave of absence. But I also graduated with my third associate's degree in welding, which was great. So from June to December, I was out on leave, taking care of my son, trying to enjoy as much time as I could because we didn't know what was going to go down. At that time, the dean had asked me if I wanted to teach at the college, but I couldn't teach because I was out on leave. It would violate it, all that stuff, you know, when you're out. So I had to wait. I was able to take more classes since I was out of work. So in December of 2018, I got my bachelor's in social psychology with 2 undergrad certs as a mental health counselor because I thought, you know, with things going on with my son, I was trying to get into the psyche, trying to figure out what's going on because he was nonverbal, a whole mess of stuff that it would take a long time to talk about. Went back to work in January of 19. I was able to accept the position at Barstow Community College as an adjunct, especially since I was coming home by 5. I'd be home by 5, have dinner, and then I shot to the college, which was about 10 minutes away, and taught from 6 to 9. I fell in love. After that first week of teaching, I said, this is what I want to do. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. Shortly after, around May, the local high school reached out and offered me a teaching position. Just worked out. The principal was my lineman coach from high school. Coach Williams hooked it up, got in. It was great. Then COVID hit. 2020, we all go on lockdown. Another friend of mine reached out to me and said, hey, Riverside County Office of Education is looking for teachers. They're giving a $10,000 sign-on bonus. You get to teach from home. I said, okay, let's do it. I did an interview on my birthday on my couch in my pajamas. Got the job, had no idea I was going to be supporting a continuation high school that had a welding program. And so I taught welding online for a year They were blown away how I could do that. I got everybody OSHA 10 certified, taught them blueprint, welding theory. And then when we came back to have in-person cohorts, they loved it. I was able to get into that shop, set some stuff up, and start teaching them some stuff. From that very first cohort, I had one of my students highlighted at one of the Construction Career Pathways conference in Vegas from NCCER. So like I made an impact already on something even during an online situation, and I knew that was where I needed to be. 2 years ago, Hemet Unified decided to take me from RCOE because I was a contractor basically supporting that district. They wanted to take me and bring me in as one of their own employees with the district, which is what everybody wants. I came to Hemet Unified and I stayed in the same positions, supporting the same school. And this year I just finished my 2 year probation. So starting in June, I'll be an official tenured instructor with the school district. That's how I got here.
That is super exciting. And everybody's got a journey. And, you know, it's difficult with family and work life balance and everything that's going on in your personal life and your professional life. So it's always a challenge. It seems like each and every time that you've made this jump, you've sort of excelled up. You've sort of like, you know, you stair-stepped your way up. But the amount of experience and knowledge that you've gained with every single trade that you've been in, you can take to that next position or the next job. That transition to being an instructor, especially during COVID, on the virtual side, is it just more theory that you were teaching the kids over Zoom, or was there some sort of virtual portion of like VR?
All the cool technology that's come out now wasn't available at that time. And see, I didn't feel like I was in a constrained position because I wasn't a teacher before. It's all new to me anyway. So teaching online kind of felt cool because I was at home. I was able to have my son at the house. And I mean, everything worked out for a reason. So I got to keep him a week at a time, you know, 1 week on, 1 week off with him and his mom. I was able to teach. So yeah, everything was on Zoom. Well, Google Classroom, the classes were really small. Some of the students that stayed on, I would pop in videos and I would show them different stuff and I would explain, you know, processes of welding and how they're, you know, tied to manufacturing. And then I would pop in, you know, things that they could kind of wrap their head around, like, okay, let's talk about a welding symbol. What does it mean? How's it applied? Let's take a look at a blueprint, like, you know, and then just kind of explain to them, like, a blueprint's a map. You know, once you learn how to read the map, then you'll figure everything out. Just took them into baby steps like that. And then, you know, a lot of videos and conversation. Sometimes I felt like I was doing a Edward James Olmos type of speech. I didn't even know if anybody was listening, but I did it that way because I thought my administrator would pop in and, you know, do a impromptu observation. So I just tried to do the best I could with what I had. And then I knew that eventually, you know, we'd come back to it in person and then I'd shine.
How much of the VR experience, obviously, also on top of the hands-on work. So for an example, I was at the FabTech show last year in Chicago, and I was visiting there. I work volunteer for the American Welding Society, and they have this, I don't know if you've seen it, this massive trailer. They have about 6 or 7 virtual Lincoln Electric machines that you can weld on. And for the first time I welded and I got like an 80 out of 100, I was baffled. And so was the instructor next to me. But it was super exciting. And all the kids that were in there were excited because they're used to games. And, you know, my kids are young and they're always on the iPad and they're always on Xbox and they get excited about games. But it was amazing to see how they were engaging with the technology and the difference of the VR experience, obviously, versus the hands-on is, I would assume, slightly different. But are you seeing VR more and more, how to engage kids and get them into, let's say, the welding trade today?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I purchased with my grant funding last year a VR system. And I'm bummed because I'm a Lincoln fan, right? So my entire shop is red. And that's because of my construction background. Being involved with construction, most of the time you've seen the engine drive units, they're red. And there are some blue components out there, but like for the majority, that's what I was used to. Anyhow, at the time that I was shopping for my VR system, Lincoln had their big Vertex system. And there was no way I wanted to lug that thing around to different craft shows and whatnot. So Miller had a brand new setup and it was in a suitcase. And then I went to Cleveland later that year and saw that Lincoln came up with their brand new compact Vertex. So anyhow, I ended up purchasing that because I wanted to be able to go to middle schools, put a booth up and have some of the kids put on the helmet and get into position and try to lay it down. It helped in my shop because I had some students that were a little apprehensive from getting in the shop because I, you know, really emphasized burns and the different injuries that could occur. So they were kind of like, I don't really know if I want to do that. The VR machine helped them get some legs under them. And then they kind of understood, okay, this is position, this is angle, this is speed. I'm setting up different categories on here. So then it went to the shop and it translated really well. Three of the students that I had thought they really weren't going to do it in the shop ended up becoming passing their qualification tests because of the baby steps they took with that. So it's got a lot of value.
Yeah, it's a good entryway into the world of welding. And I saw it, experienced it firsthand. And it's great that you invested in the technology to share with kids, because that's an easy way or a simplified way to get them interested. And that's some of the pushback out there, that not only that, you know, you can get burned. Talk to me about wages in welding. And I'm just going to read off some information from weldingworkforcedata.com, which is run by the American Welding Society. The median salary stated by them is $25.96 an hour, or $53,500. A lot of the pushback out there by kids is that it's not enough money, that I can make money working for a fast food institution, or I can do something else. I could do something in social media. What are you seeing on the welding side, especially for students who have moved on, who have graduated, who have gotten jobs? Are you seeing the wages higher, or is it different depending upon location?
It really depends on the location that they're serving and the type of job they're getting into. So this has nothing to do with welding, but one of my welding graduates got hired on with the labor's union. And that was because they were doing part of the union, or the company that was part of the union was doing a project behind our school site. I made friends with them while they were there. They had to use my kind of driveway and interact with my welders every day as they were going to work. They poured a slab for us. It worked out great. Anyways, at the end of their project, their superintendent came to my shop and gave me a handful of business cards. And he said, yo, you have any hustlers? Tell them to give me a call. Well, I had one kid that was like, he was the one. His name was Leo. And I told Leo, I said, hit up this guy and don't give up. So he played phone tag with him for about 6 days. Literally, the guy would call him and say, hey, call me back in an hour. Leo would call him back in an hour. He said, hey, man, I can't talk right now. Call me back in about 2 hours. He'll do it again. And Leo never got an attitude. Every time the guy told him, hey, I can't talk right now, he called back when he was supposed to. On the sixth day, he said, hey, just come to the site. I'll give you an interview. Even then, he waited another hour and a half. At that time, Leo was wearing a pair of tennis shoes and some jeans and a hoodie. And I said, hey, bro, go into the locker room and put on a pair of boots and grab a pair of gloves and put them in your back pocket and then go talk to that superintendent. What do you know? He walked back to my shop, high-fiving me, telling me, he goes, Brian, just wanted me to tell you he hired your first student. Anyways, long story short, he's making $47 an hour right now. He has a 22 Q7 as his weekend car, another commuter car to go to work, and he's about to buy his house before he's 19.
These are the success stories. And you just kind of blew away my numbers, which is great. Using Leo as sort of the model, what are the most important traits you believe really are essential for success in the welding trade?
Gotta be a hustler. Like, you cannot be given direction. If you cower when someone tells you no, or somebody tells you you're not doing something right, you are not gonna make it in this trade. You gotta be thick-skinned, but at the same time, humble. And you gotta have that hustle mentality to where, okay, if I'm gonna give you a broom, you're gonna clean this whole room and make it shiny without an attitude, without anything, because you wanna do it. And that's hard. That's hard to teach a lot of young kids. Leo came from a different setup. He actually had a two-year-old kid when he came to see me. As a senior, worked full-time at McDonald's at night. And he's like, bro, help me get into this game. I want to take care of my son. And he already knew he messed up. Back in the day, he used to box. And he's a short dude, so he's kind of like scrappy dude. I already knew he had that mentality in him that, like, if he was given a task, he's going to do it. Having that tenacity, it's almost like being in a sport, right? Not everybody's going to make varsity. It's just the way it is. The good ones are going to do it and they're going to be successful for it. I wish the trades was more equitable where everybody's going to be great. You can be great, but you got to have that drive, that same kind of athletic drive in a way to outperform yourself every day to be very successful. And that's just successful. I've seen some mediocre trades workers that are just fine making the money they make. You get into a union atmosphere, that's kind of a drawback because you'll get paid the same amount as the guy who's busting his butt. You know, you just got to, you got to want it.
I feel you need the will and the skill, right? You need both. If you don't have the skill can be learned, but the will is hard to learn. To someone to be hungry or to hustle, to be a doer, that's very hard to teach. It almost comes internally. And for Leo, it sounds like, obviously, you know, he wanted to do well for his family and level up his game. And it sounds like he was a sponge and gathered all the information. And look, it's not easy for someone who doesn't call you back 6 times in a row. A lot of people will just give up after the first 2 times and say, I'm not going to do it. But he listened to you. He put his boots on. He put his gloves in his back pocket. And now he's working and making, would you say $47 an hour?
He's working 12-hour days, 6 days a week.
Amazing. Are there any other success stories that you want to share that have come out of your school?
One really good story that I got is when I was with Barstow Community College, I was asked to be a part of the Cadence Project. 10 community colleges in California were chosen to participate in this research program. We had to infiltrate a Department of Defense supplier and try to get 2 of our students as interns into their facility. I happened to make a good connection to an aerospace industry in the high desert called X-Quadrum. They're a research and testing facility that does liquid fuel and solid fuel rocket boosters. I happened to meet them from a mutual connection. I went there with my program and my pitch, and I dressed like I normally do, work boots and all. I met the president, talked to him, explained what I was trying to do. And this guy just happened to be a big advocate for students. He works with Cal Poly Pomona and their aerospace program. And he loves the idea of having young kids coming to his program and flourish. Well, I was able to get my female intern hired on with their company in less than the 72-hour internship that we had. So I'd say the third day that she was there, the guys in the machine shop said, hey, we need Aaliyah. We got a big project coming up. Because she was like that. She was a sponge. I had her in my welding program at the college. I watched her flourish among all the other students because she wanted to learn. She wanted to know. When the chance came up for her to be a part of this project, I knew she'd be a good fit. Right now, her entire life changed because she now works for this amazing aerospace company that is continuing to grow. You got to look up X-Quadrum. X-Quadrum's doing some big stuff. And when I was in their lobby, looking at all the plaques on the wall, and I see United States of America, and I notice they're all patents. Patents that this guy and this other guy have for collector rings and all this different type of stuff for rocket boosters. Like, I thought it was amazing. And now that she's a part of that because of the connection that I brought. And I remember one of the things that stood out the most from that president, when I had my folder with me and everything, and I said, hey, I just wanted to make sure that you knew I wasn't full of crap. No, man. He goes, you know how I know you're not full of crap? He pointed to my boots. He goes, your boots tell everything. And I looked down at my dirty, scuffed up boots. And he knew I didn't come in like with some Versace shoes trying to pitch a program. You know, he knew I was for real. So that authenticity that I can have with different employers, my ability to connect. I mean, like I said, I connected with that contractor in a way where it was an easy pass off for my student. In reality, that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find more of the me so that we can go out there and connect to these different business agents to give these students the opportunity. The population's out there. I've been to Skills USA Nationals in Atlanta 2 years in a row. You're talking 20,000 kids that are ready to be hired right now. The gap can be filled, but it's the people out there researching and looking for these people to fill the gap are looking in the wrong area. They're hiring their cousin or their brother. And they usually have a meth problem or they got some kind of problem where they can't perform. They got that nepotism involved. I mean, how do you break that? That's a whole nother conversation.
The latest data shows about 330,000 welders are needed by 2028. You know, it's about 82,500 welders needed. Are there enough people or kids coming out of trade school or out of schools to really narrow this shortage? Are you seeing that, or is just there's just not enough people in the trades? Or is it from industry, that industry is having problems trying to find those individuals? Where do you think the miss is coming?
I want to say it's the connection between the organizations and the educational leaders. One of the biggest barriers I have is I can't get out of my classroom. I'm literally in my classroom from 8 a.m. till 6:30 at night because I teach an adult ed program. And I mean, that's just me. Other teachers might have more flexibility, but I don't have the time to go make these connections with different industry partners other than through, you know, LinkedIn, which has been great. I've been able to make a lot of connections, which is ironic for people that are outside of California and have a big following on the East Coast, you know, NCCR, all the people out there, everybody is trying to support, but then it's like the local, they're tied up, you know, and that seems to be the biggest barrier that I'm trying to break through. It's like industry needs to show up to the CTE advisory meetings. They need to show up to the CTE events at the middle school and the high school and really understand that this is going to be their next candidate pool. Baby boomers are retiring, and unfortunately, they're passing away with all their knowledge. I think that's the biggest mistake we're making, is we're not harvesting that library of knowledge that each one of these men and women have before they leave the trades. And so now it's just going to be left to theory, books. Hopefully somebody's mentored somebody right along the way. I think there needs to be an emphasis, just like there is with nurses, bringing up apprentices in the game. There's so much technical information that needs to be passed down and understood in order to be effective that I don't know why we're not putting that same emphasis on. You know, people said, oh, well, go into the trades because, you know, you're less than, or you got in trouble and now you can't get a job because you're a felon. And so that stigma of, oh, well, we got uneducated people in the trades. They drink, they do drugs, and they're rowdy. Well, they do a lot of complicated work, which is the reason why substance abuse is involved. Because at the end of the day, when your brain is fried and you've done 1,000 different tasks and you're safe and you kept everybody else safe, then they go and unwind, you know? So, I mean, there's a lot involved, just like a lawyer would go home and drink after a long day in the court, just like a doctor after a long day of surgery. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. But nobody looks at those people as like, oh my God, they're awful because they had a glass of bourbon.
Yeah, the trades, I always say, has a PR problem. That's just been decades and decades of what people assume what the trades are, right? If you're a bad student, you can always be a welder or a plumber. And it's a bunch of BS because it doesn't hold the same amount of weight it once did back in the day. The numbers really show it, you know, especially that Gen Z is becoming sort of the tool belt generation. If you've heard that article out there, that is what we're seeing, especially trade school was up. I think it was either 15 or 16% last year. So it's moving in that direction with advocacy out there. And obviously the social media and putting it out there. I do see a lot of people in different trades, in welding or it's electrical or it's carpenter. They were actually showcasing their work, you know, especially on Instagram or TikTok. You see every single day they're doing the work and showing you how to do it, on top of also teaching potential younger generation that, yeah, you can get into this field or in this trade and you can take these steps and look at the money that I just made. There's a lot more visibility out there into what people are actually doing to prior years than people had this old adage that it was option B for the bad kids. And I think that's just changing even in a very short period of time.
I agree. There also needs to be a little bit of disclaimers on some of the videos of students watch. I get some students that come out and they go, hey, look at this thing I seen on TikTok. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. They're like, this guy grabbed a stinger and a piece of rebar and he started welding with it. Can we do that? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. There's a lack of censorship in everything that we deal with in society now. You know what I mean? And if students are given the understanding that, look, take information for face value. And if you really want to take it for deeper value, then do your investigation. See who's putting the content out. See what audience they're trying to reach. If it's entertainment, then it's entertainment. If it's educational, then it's education. You know, it's like you got to be a smart consumer of information.
My son comes to me and he watches something on YouTube Shorts and is regurgitating whatever. I was like, that's not true. You need to do your due diligence. And just because somebody said something on their YouTube channel doesn't mean that it's the way to do it, especially with application wise. So definitely, but there's a wealth of information out there. You just got to make sure that you're looking at the right information. So what's next for you? What's coming down the pipeline for you?
Right now, we are in the process of getting our facility accredited to be an accredited testing facility with AWS. I'm also in the process of renewing our LA City certification as a testing facility. Once we get that into place, now our students are going to be able to walk out with a certified credential. You know, that's catalog. Right now, they're walking away with qualifications, which are still good for their resume, but I want to give them that value that they're coming from something that's solid. Along with that, I'm building a program for the community college. I just submitted my curriculum. They hired me as curriculum author last January. I just finished the revisions and we're up for first read right now. As long as everything goes through tech review on time, academic senate, then we get the chancellor's approval, we'll be running that community college program on my facility at the adult school until we can get some money and some data set up so that we can petition to the state to build on their main campus. Once we build on their main campus, oh man, it's going to take off from there. Now I'm going to want to look for more instructors. I want to build the program to be premier. No one tapped this well for years in this area. Mount San Jacinto College has three sites, one in San Jacinto, one in Menifee, and one in Temecula. I'm already breaking ground with this. We have tons of industry that are surrounding us waiting for the candidate pool. So that is the next step. Once I get into that, then you're going to see a different role start to change. I am looking for a replacement at the high school and the adult ed, but I also don't know how things would go because, you know, if the community college ends up not following through, you know, I'll stay where I'm at and continue doing what I'm doing.
Sounds like you got some exciting things coming down the pipeline and you're super, super busy. And I love the passion because I've been following you for quite a while and I just see the passion in your posts and sharing the success stories of some of your students and just you telling me about Leo and him getting a job and he's making $47 is just amazing. And if others can follow suit, that it is possible to be successful, but you need to have the will and you need to learn the skill. You need to be a sponge and you need to take it all in and apply that. Because if you don't, it might not work out to where you want it to be. So the results are really left in your hands. Where can people find you on social and how people can reach out to you?
So mostly right now, LinkedIn. LinkedIn seems to be my one go-to. I don't know how to navigate Instagram, so I'm terrible. I'm not part of that group. You know, I don't have one. Facebook is like for family. But so if they reached out to me on LinkedIn, they could find my email address and, you know, get a hold of me there.
Joshua, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today and just listening to your journey. And it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners, where our mission is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades and make them cool. Once again, we'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast.
Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.